And some questions for you. Do we have any new members here tonight? Anybody? No, nobody new. Okay. Anybody have any good news? Thrilling things? Announcements? No? Okay.
Yes, I suppose I could.
My
publisher just gave me my publication date for my third book of January 17th. So everybody, get your pre-orders in now. Genuine Gold is the title.
Catherine? And I forgot. I have a short story that's going to be published by my publisher February 18th. It's called Come As You Want to Be.
And is it going to be a single, like a short story?
It's a standalone short story. Yeah, it's on bellabooks.com.
Great.
Very good.
I guess as long as we're announcing publicly. I have the first of a novella series called Have a Bite coming out in May. It's a vampire thriller and has a little bit of a culinary twist to it. That sounds intriguing.
I'm not really sure I like the sound of that.
So that's May.
Okay. Anybody else?
But keep an eye on the battery.
This coming week, you will get an announcement from us. We try to limit our mail blasts, but there's a lot to tell you at the beginning of the year. And in this particular one, there will be information about two mailing lists. One you may already be on, which is the Chapter Yahoo group, which is a great place for you to discuss things, ask questions. The mail blasts that go out from the board are really informational, just from us to you, but to share things among yourselves is really the way you get the most out of the organization. So I encourage you to join that list if you're not already on it. The information on how to join it will be in the mailing that you get this week. There will also be another loop that is discussed in that mail that I think will be of interest to anybody who came to the last meeting, because a lot of people had questions about how to get their answers for questions with self-publishing. And National, as part of their new initiative towards self-publishing, has begun a self-publishing loop. So there will be information in this mail that tells you how to sign up for the National loop, where anybody who is interested in issues about self-publishing or how-tos or just anything can ask questions and get help from other members who are already doing that. I know that there are at least a few people on there who self-publish regularly, so there is a knowledge base there, even though it is growing. So both of those are coming. The other thing is that we have our reading. Is Scott here?
Yes.
Okay, Scott, will you just stand up?
Sure.
You should all know Scott. Scott is the vice president, and also he organizes our lovely reading group, our reading events.
Murderous reading events
at KGB Bar, where, you know, it's dark, and all that matters are your words, not your face. And everybody's had a few drinks, so it's a congenial crowd. Our next one is coming up February 26th, and we still need three more people.
Yeah, 26th, Saturday.
Saturday the 26th. And we need three more people to read, so if you're interested, you don't have to be published. You can be published. You can read from something that is already out, or something you're just working on, something you want feedback on, whatever you like. And just talk to Scott there. And he will line you up.
Email me or come up to me. I know some people have had, you know, whatever schedule three things came up long year on, but let me know. We have them each every other month. Okay, and so just let me know. And my email is Leslie. You can write for, is it MWA Events?
Yes.
The email, it will come to my personal email.
MWA Events.
Right.
At MWANY.org.
Email that and just say, Scott, I'm interested, it'll come to my personal email.
Okay.
All right. Okay. And if a lot of people answer, then it'll be like it's scheduled for April and so on.
Sure.
All right.
And Juliet, is Juliet still here?
Yes.
She is. Okay. Hi. Some of you know that we also do these write-ins, where I encourage you, if you're having trouble getting words down and you just need a congenial group of people, we have so far had them at the last Sunday of every month in Manhattan, and there's more information about that on the Facebook page, and if you are confused or anything, you can email me and I will help you find it. I'm president at MWA New York, NWANY.org. But we are having our inaugural Brooklyn write-in. This Saturday. Information about that will be on the MWA New York Facebook page, or you can email me if you're interested in it. Juliet organizes these, so if you would maybe like to have a write-in near you, you should talk to her.
That's right.
Smile and wave. So, that's all from me, and now I am going to turn you over to our wonderful panelists, who will fill you in on all things LGBT and killing. Our moderator and panel leader is Anne Aptaker. Is it Aptaker or is it Aptaker?
Okay. No, Aptaker.
Aptaker. Anne has earned a reputation as a respected, if cheeky, exhibition designer and curator of art during her career in museums and galleries. Taking the approach that what art authorities find uncomfortable, the public would likely enjoy. Exhibitions Anne has curated have garnered favorable reviews in the New York Times, Art in America, American Art Review, and other publications. As you would expect, she brings that same attitude to writing. She writes an especially tangy variety of historical crime fiction. Her short stories have appeared in two editions of the noir crime anthology Fedora. Her flash fiction story, A Night in Town, appeared in the online zine Punk Soul Poet. In addition to curating and designing art exhibits and writing crime stories, Anne is also an art writer and an adjunct professor of art history at the New York Institute of Technology. Her debut novel, Criminal Gold, was a Goldie Award finalist. Tarnished Gold is her second novel in the Cantor Gold crime series. There it is. And book three, Genuine Gold, is currently in progress. That's the one I believe she just told us about. And obviously is a member here and a member of the Gold Crown Literary Society. And I'm going to give this to Anne so she can introduce the other fabulous panelists.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. First of all, thank you all for coming, especially on this miserable rainy night, and I know that some of you come from some distances, so we really appreciate you coming out tonight to hear what we have to say. So, I'll make the introductions. Down there at the far end is R.G. Emanuel. R.G. is also a native New Yorker, and she spent more than 20 years as an editor, writer, and typesetter, so she knows publishing very well. When she was a child, a neighbor called her a vampire because she only came out after dark. So it's fitting that she writes about creatures of the night, which includes her first novel, Twice Bitten. She is a co-editor of the Lambda Literary Finalist Anthology, All You Can Eat, a buffet of lesbian erotica and romance. And she was a Golden Crown winner for Unwrap These Gifts, which was also an anthology of short stories for the holiday season. Is that, that's right, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. She also is a member of, was an editor, pardon me, of Skulls and Crossbones, Tales of Women's Pirates. She's also a culinary school graduate, which is what inspired her to write her romantic novella, Spice to Add Spice to Taste, and what she mentioned earlier, Have a Bite, which is the first of the Vampires of Brooklyn Chronicles. We always thought there were plenty of vampires in Brooklyn. Her short stories can be found in numerous anthologies. So that's R.G. Emanuel. Next to RG is someone who many of you will find familiar since she has been here at the New York chapter of the MWA. It's Catherine Mayorisi. And as I say, she has been on the board of directors of the chapter here of Mystery Writers of America and chaired the Mentor Committee. She's currently co-president of the New York chapter of Sisters in Crime and a member also of the Golden Crown Literary Society and RWA, Romance Writers of America. Catherine's short stories, Justice for All and Murder Italian Style, are in the anthologies Murder New York Style, Fresh Slices of Murder in New York Style, Family Matters, both published by the New York Tri-State Sisters in Crime. A lesbian romance, The Sex Club, is included in the anthology Best Lesbian Romances of 2014, published by Cleus Press, and was written as a backstory for two unpublished mysteries featuring the NYPD detective Chiara, am I pronouncing that
Chiara.
Right? Oh, Chiara, excuse me, Chiara Corelli. Catherine's first full-length lesbian romance, Matters of the Heart, will be published by Bella Books this coming June. So that's Catherine Mayorisi. And next to me, representing the male end of the spectrum here, is my dear friend Andrew J. Peters. Andy is the author of the Weirkat Thriller Horror Series, published by Vagabondage Press, and two books for young adults called The Seventh Pleiades and Banished Sons of Poseidon, both published by Bold Strokes Books, which is published in my books as well. Andy grew up in Buffalo, New York, studied psychology at Cornell University, and has spent most of his career as a social worker and an advocate for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth. A lifelong writer, Andrew has been a contributing writer at the Good Men Project, Gay YA, YA Highway, Dear Teen Me, and La Blaga, among other media. Andrew now lives in New York City with his husband, Gennaro, and their cat, Chloe. Andrew Peters. So what I'm going to do to start the discussion, I'm going to throw out a question to our panel here and have them answer as they see fit. And we'll continue the discussion. And about 20 of 9, we'll stop our discussion and throw things open to the audience for a Q&A. And per the tradition here at MWA meetings, depending on who answers the best or who asks the best questions, three people will each get a book. And get those pencils sharpened and ask your good questions. Okay, so to begin at the beginning, statistically, and there have been a number of studies, and you can check them out if you like, but there's been a number of studies that say statistically, books about LGBTQ characters have a tough time attracting a mainstream audience, heterosexual readers. Just why do you think that is? I'm asking the panel. And as a sub-idea of that, just what defines an LGBTQ mystery or thriller? Is it the characters? Is it the milieu that they're in? Is it a gay milieu? Or is it just the sexual identity of the author? So who amongst us would like to tackle that question to begin with? Catherine.
There you go.
Okay. Actually, I think one of the reasons, I think there are many reasons, one of the reasons that we have a hard time attracting straight readers to the lesbian and gay literature is that it's not really available, easily available. And I think it's the same problem that any writer who's published with a small publisher has. Our books are not on the shelves in the bookstores. If you go into Barnes and Nobles, I go into mine, and there's all these mysteries and all these romances, and then when I ask about lesbian or gay, they point me to the back of the store. I mean, literally, it's one shelf, the bottom shelf, and the farthest bookcase in the store, not related to any of the genres that I might be looking for. And it's on the bottom shelf. There may be 15 or so books, mostly romance, but they're just mixed in with academic books about lesbians and gays. So it's not like your average reader can browse and come across a book that looks interesting and pick it up. I mean, you have to go look for it. So I think that's one reason. It's availability. And for instance, I buy a lot of lesbian romance online at Amazon. I don't read regular romance, and I never read lesbian romance until I wrote one, actually. But I got today from them, I get from them these things, you might be interested in these romances, and there's not, it's all straight romance. So I think that's part of the problem is availability and visibility. There may be other issues of people not wanting to read them, but the other thing, I think that what makes a lesbian romance for me is lesbian characters. I don't think you can have a lesbian romance without lesbian characters, actually. And then the third question, how do my characters differ from straight characters? Actually, I'm not sure, because when I started writing my mysteries, actually, the romances are a later thing, but when I actually started writing and I was writing mysteries, my characters were straight. And it somehow I just kept going back, and my character was attracted to this suspect, and the suspect's name was Brett. And in my mind, you know, the suspect was a man. And yet, when I started writing more detail and picturing Brett, it turned out Brett was a woman. And so, you know, I think my character is a detective. She lives a regular life, but she's attracted to women. So that's my 2 cents or 20 cents.
Well,
I
don't know if it stretches. No. Not quite. Can you? Everybody move down a little bit. Yeah.
Well, just going back to the availability issue for a second. Part of the problem is, part of the fault lies with the publishers themselves. The gay writing community has been marginalized mm-hmm. by the mainstream publishing world. The word ghettoized has been bandied about, but that causes some controversy, so I'm not going to use that word. I will say marginalized. A gay writer, a gay or lesbian writer trying to get a book sold to a mainstream publishing house is almost impossible. And you might say, oh, but look at Sarah Waters, and oh, look at you know, a few other names come to mind, but those are the rare cases. And usually, the ones who do manage to sell a book to a mainstream publishing house, their books fall under the category of literary, not genre, not mystery, not romance, not anything else, literary. So you basically have to write something really lofty to sell to a mainstream publishing house. Otherwise, it's impossible. And so we've been forced to go to these small, and when that's why these small houses came up in the first place. Mm-hmm. All of these, you know, these gay presses, starting back in the day with NIAID and Cleus and Allison Books. I'm sure I'm forgetting one or two, because the mainstream world wasn't publishing us. And that really still is the case. It's changing a little bit, but it's very, very difficult. The majority of if you are a gay or lesbian writer, you really are forced to go to one of the smaller houses, which in turn leads to less availability. Mm-hmm. Because those books from those small houses end up on that one shelf, if there is that one shelf. Because that one shelf is shrinking and shrinking, and some bookstores, they've disappeared altogether. And so your book, if you're lucky enough to get it in the bookstore, will end up on that one shelf in the corner of the room and will not be seen. So part of the fault does lie with the mainstream publishing world.
Yeah, I'm not gonna, I'll ditto what was said before a lot, because that was my first reaction too. It's like, how do we get any readers to know about our books, regardless of their sexuality? Because that's the big challenge when you're with a small press. I guess, you know, what I can add to this, a thought that occurred to me was just the, you know, habits and styles of readers generally, and the way that I reflect on my own reading habits, and in some ways I'm, you know, more forgiving of non-gay readers who don't read LGBT fiction, you know, because it is for escapism, and we like to escape into familiar worlds where we can see ourselves. And I myself, when, you know, offered book A that's has a heterosexual character, and book B that has a gay character, I'll probably pick up the book that has the gay character in it, just based on my, you know, personal interest. But I do think that there's, you know, obvious limitations there, that you miss out on a lot of really good stories, and this, you know, will probably segue into some of the other questions. I know myself, a recent book that I read that surprised me how much I liked one of the main characters by Isabel Allende, City of Beasts. And it features a 16-year-old boy who happens to be heterosexual, and it's a pretty low-key portrayal, but was really a character that I thought, boy, I would really have related to this kid as a teenager. We probably would have been friends. So there's lots of different access points that you can miss when you you know, just go with what you're familiar with.
There's something I'd like to add to what the others have said, and I agree with all of them. Interestingly, as RG said, it is changing a little bit, and in the case, say, of Sarah Waters writing, it's lofty, though she does write sort of crime-ish kind of things, mm-hmm. but in terms of mainstream publishers publishing LGBTQ characters or authors, They are ahead of us in the UK, and Sarah Waters is in the UK. The sort of American Puritan heritage is sort of keeping it back here. Interestingly, leading the way to making LGBTQ characters and stories brought into mainstream audience is, of course, Hollywood. You now have on TV, you have all this lesbian sex in Orange is the New Black, you have the hit show Transparent about a transgender man coming out as transgendered well into his late middle age, and so on. And there's really quite a few, and of course the film Carol, and so on, there's quite a few films and television series that are showing LGBTQ people and attracting very, very strong audiences. It's interesting to me that Hollywood, which has been sort of the, you know, sort of following the culture all during the 20th century, in the 21st is leading the culture in terms of our issues. And that publishing, which has always been considered the more avant-garde in the 19th and 20th centuries, as far as leading with intellectual ideas and more avant-garde places, is still lagging behind in having the courage to publish to a wider audience. Which brings up something else that I want to ask the group here, and something that you guys may want to address, I hope, in the Q&A. And that is, all of us on this panel, and everyone in this room, has been reading mainstream fiction since childhood, since C-Spot Run and Alice Ran Up the Hill. All through our high school, all through our college, we've gotten reading assignments for the classics, for Hemingway, for Dickens, for everybody. And we have all been reading mainstream fiction as well all of our lives and enjoyed it. You know, I still read mainstream fiction, even though I write this particular series is LGBTQ, a lesbian series. A good writer is a good writer. So I want to know what your feeling is about that question, which is the topic of tonight's event, is we read your books, why don't you read ours? Why, aside from the availability issue, why do you think mainstream readers are not reading LGBTQ works? Anybody want to tackle that? IG?
I think that has a lot of answers as well, but I think the most obvious is that it freaks people out. You know, a lot of heterosexual people are just freaked out at the thought of reading about a romance between two men or two women, or God forbid there's a sex scene. Oh my God, what am I going to do if they actually kiss or have sex? You know, where am I going to crawl? And I think just the idea freaks them out and aren't willing to even give it a try. Because, you know, maybe it won't freak you out. Maybe it'll just seem normal. Like, and I think that's probably changing a little bit, too. I think as gay relationships are being accepted more as the norm, and, you know, gay marriage now and everything, I think maybe people are starting to be a little more willing. But I think it's pretty obvious that the notion of reading about a romance between two men or two women is just so foreign and so weird that they just don't want to give it a chance.
I would say, actually, I know that we're all in this room mystery writers, and most mysteries don't have sex in them, unless you're Nora Roberts and then you write J.D. Robb and you put, you know, intense sex scenes in your book, which I always skip over, actually. But I like her writing and I like her stories and I usually read her books. So, but I think that that may be, in terms of, anyway, of mysteries, is that most mystery writers don't look for sex in the mysteries. They want the mystery, they're interested in the investigation or whatever you know that you find in a mystery, and you know if we're talking about romance, I think I don't know why
I know a male friend of mine or acquaintance once told me he was writing, and he was on Dorothy L., which I think most of you know is a mystery line, and he was writing mysteries. And his mysteries had male-to-male sex in them. And at one point, he felt like he was caught because he had written his book without a sex scene, but he felt if he put it out there into the gay world without a sex scene, that he would lose readers. But if he put it into the sex scene into the book, then he would lose straight readers. And it's a bind. I mean, I don't know. He actually he went with the safer thing and put the sex scene in. But I think that, you know, sex makes people uncomfortable and to begin with. And it's true that romance, straight and gay, has a lot of sex and graphic sex sometimes. And I think that some people wouldn't read a straight romance. Some straight people, because their sex makes them uncomfortable. So I don't know, it's really complicated. Sorry, I don't have an answer.
Yeah, I would just add to your point, Anne, about Hollywood maybe being a step ahead. In the young adult market, I think there has been a little more progress. Think about Cassandra Clare's Mortal Instruments series, but with a supporting gay character, and there are other examples as well. But I think it's still, supporting characters. We don't have real, blockbuster young adult novels that feature a gay male character or lesbian character. There certainly are some out there, but they're not, reaching the heights of the Twilight series or Cassandra Clare's series for sure.
Insofar as my own work is concerned, I write mid-20th century, golden age of noir, stories, at least this particular series is, the Candor Gold series. And she is a very dapper criminal. She's an art thief and a smuggler in mid-20th century New York. The first book takes place in 1949, the second in 1950, and the third one I'm writing now jumps to 1952. And in that time, of course, it was very dangerous to be an out gay person, but she is anyway. But as far as this discussion, because of who she is and what she does, she is a very sexual being. Now, it's a mystery, it's a crime, it's crime fiction. So unlike romance, right, it's not steeped in sex scenes all over the place. That would make no sense whatsoever. And in the first book, for instance, where Cantor and another woman who she is attracted to, but they're involved in a crime and they're running for their lives, and the whole thing takes place over one night, and they are literally running for their lives. To have a quickie in the back seat just is not going to make any sense at all. So there's no sex in that book, and there shouldn't be. There needn't be. There's a lot of sensuality. We know how attracted Cantor is to this other woman, so it's very sensual, but there's no sex. In the second one, there is. Now, I think it's important for all of us here on the panel, and also for any people out here who are authors, many of you are, whether you have sex scenes in a book or not, for me, and I think for all of us, especially in a mystery, right, where sex is not like in romance where it's this passionate, central core, if there's a sex scene, it has to be able to reveal something about the characters. It has to tell us something more about them or advance the story in some way. Otherwise, it's just gratuitous and doesn't belong there. So in the two very small sex scenes that are in here, both of those scenes serve that function. But I wondered, as I was writing this, as I'm writing these two scenes, whether it would be, like as RG says, are you guys going to get nauseous at the idea of reading about two women going at it? And I thought about this because all of us have been reading straight books and seeing straight movies with straight people having sex since we're old enough to be allowed into movies where straight people have sex. And so maybe we're just inured to it. It doesn't make me nauseous to see two straight people having sex on the screen or in a book. And I think we all wonder whether the opposite is true, if the straight world will ever be able to read about our kinds of folks involved in physical romance, the sex act of physical love, or even sex without love, which happens in straight books too. So this is something that none of us seem to be able to answer because we don't know. But I think it's a legitimate question for concerned readers, straight or gay, of being able to bridge that divide and being able to read what would also be a darn good book. You know, it's a darn good mystery. You know, it's a darn good crime fiction. So moving on now, just real quick, have any of you tried to interest mainstream readers in your books? And if you have you met with any success? Anybody want to tackle that one? Andy?
I guess really briefly. I think it's a very good practice for authors to try to reach as many people as possible. So I definitely have tried to market to a broad spectrum. Through events like this, through genre labeled marketing things that didn't have to do with LGBT. And I'd say on balance, I've had better experience marketing in LGBT identified events.
Honestly, I have not made the attempt because I thought it would be a pointless effort. I don't even think it ever really occurred to me until we started talking about this panel. And, I think maybe we should. for the very reasons that we're discussing, I just didn't think that anybody would be interested. But who knows? We are talking about change. Things are changing. Maybe if we all did make the effort and did make our stuff known to the straight reading community, maybe it would improve our chances. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, actually, nothing of mine other than some short stories that don't have gay characters has been published yet. But I would like to open it to a broader audience. Especially my mysteries, when I can. My first priority right now is the editing. I've just finished the first round of editing on my romance that's coming out in June. But I'm going back to the two full-length mysteries that I have that I started looking for an agent a few years ago, and then I just got tired. And I started writing short stories, but I like my characters, I like the books, and I think that if I can get them published, that maybe they would do okay. But I would love for everybody to read them. One of my binds right now is, I haven't submitted them to my publisher, who's a lesbian publisher. I'm pretty sure they would take them. They seem to like everything that I've given them though so far. I have another romance coming out in January and another short story that's going to be in an anthology in June that they're putting out. So I feel like they would take them. But I wonder if I would be just putting myself in my little box again and whether it's worth it to try to go for the mainstream publishers. So I'm in between. Of course, all of you would buy them, right? I'm taking names before you talk to them. I have the list from tonight's thing. Thanks.
I have tried to market to a broader mainstream audience and have met with some success, not as much as I'd like, but some. And interestingly, the feedback that I get from my straight readers is they generally like the book. I've been very, very lucky in that the books have been very well received. And they've been well received by the LGBT readership. But to my great surprise, they've also been well received by whatever straight readership I have. And I have to give you, I have to make one admission to you and pass on something that a woman, a straight woman who's been married for many years, very happily married from what I understand, said to me, which, you know, sort of like, whoa, I think I've done my job. And she said, you know, she is straight, and she said she has, you know, very happy married kids, not looking to look outside the marriage. But she said if she ever dated a woman, she wants to date Cantor Gold once. She would like to go out on one date with Cantor Gold, who's my protagonist. And that made me feel very good. Wow, I've done my job. Okay, so again, moving along. Now, interestingly, according to Romance Writers of America, who have started tracking male and male romance fiction, so Andy, this is really sort of for you.
Okay.
Heterosexual female readers are big buyers of male and male mystery and romance books, or in general, all the genres of books, if it's male on male as their central romantic relationship. And so they are very big buyers, and they are second only to gay male readers. Why is it that straight females are reading gay male books?
And you want a gay man to answer that?
Absolutely. I am in no position to answer it.
Well, you know, first of all, heterosexual female readers are reading more than everybody in every single genre, I think you would say, except for science fiction and fantasy. 80% of fiction readers are women. So men have a lot of work to do to catch up. I think it definitely speaks to, you know, the need for efforts to engage boys in reading, for sure, because you know, women have gotten it a whole lot more than the guys. Regarding MM, I do have some thoughts about that, both as an author and a reader, and I think an important distinction to make, and that's that the MM, male-male, romance genre is very specific. It grew out of slash or fan fiction. With you know, a tradition of slashing, even I guess the origins you might say would be Star Trek and having Captain Kirk and Spock in a sexual and romantic relationship all the way back in the 70s. There's, you know, with the internet sort of took off a lot more in the 90s, and you had, you know, all sorts of teen television shows that were slashed to have straight male characters in romantic relationships. So to that extent, it's continued tradition of, you know, having a particular fantasy about you know, gay male relationships that's not so much reflective, I think, of our real lives, and, you know, makes it, you know, a unique genre and not so much a crossover phenomenon that you might think. There's, you know, specific expectations, I think, for authors who are really in the MM romance category. And while I certainly have marketed to that, because you may have already caught the drift, I will market to anyone who might just read one of my books. And I do have more female readers than I do have male readers, at least if Goodreads is a barometer of that. 79% of people who've shelved the Werecat are women, and I would guess that the vast majority are heterosexual. The young adult series is 77%. So, you know, there's sort of two things going on. More women are reading generally, and the MM romance category, I think, you know, has kind of maybe not created crossover readers, but there's been enough overlap that some gay romance fits in there.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but could you explain, you keep on using this term slashed.
Slash.
And I have no idea what you mean.
Well, are you familiar with what fan fiction is? Taking established
yes.
Whether they're televised series or other literature. There's a whole tradition with the Harry Potter series, actually. You can Google that and probably be horrified by all sorts of things that those characters are doing. And J.K. Rowling actually supports that, interestingly enough. It certainly doesn't hurt her popularity, I'm sure. But at any rate, Slash specifically is taking characters and putting them in different relationships than they were in the original canon. So in Harry Potter, Slash fiction would be Harry Potter and Ron Weasley, having, a romance.
Thank you.
I just like to add to that one of the things that blows my mind about this women being interested in the male-to-male fiction is that many of the writers of male-to-male fiction are straight women. And this I cannot understand at all, but that's the way it is. And you straight women are really strange.
But the response that you usually get when you ask that question is that, a woman will say, well, why do you read or why do you write about two men having sex? And the response is because two men are better than one. That I could not really argue with in some ways. So, it's not... not that strange. It's really not that strange.
Okay. RG brought up an interesting question. She wrote to me when we were putting together this list of questions. And she directed me towards a research that was done, an article about research done by Sisters in Crime and the Vita Count survey, which some of you may be familiar with. But in any event, according to a survey conducted by Women in Crime and the very respected Vita Count, women make up more than one half of all mystery writers. Okay, so this goes beyond just the LGBTQ issues, but I'll bring it back to that in a moment. But in any event, women make up more than one half of all mystery writers. But we get what the article said were criminally few reviews in mainstream book reviews like the New York Review of Books or the New York Times Book Review. For LGBTQ writers, it becomes, then it shrinks down even more. If straight women can't get reviewed in the New York Times, except, roughly 60, more than 60%, close to 70% of the reviews by Marilyn Stasio, in crime no less, in the New York Times Book Review are of male writers, and 30% are of female writers. The number of lesbian or gay writers being reviewed is minuscule. Which I think also goes back to our original question about availability. People just don't know about our books. And when you get down to it, of course, a good mystery is a good mystery. Good writing is good writing. So we struggle upstream with this. Now, as far as women getting so few reviews in the mainstream publications, how do you all feel about the LGBTQ writers? What can we do to get the mainstream publications to review our books? We do very well, also according to this survey, our saving grace is we get reviewed all over the place in various blogs. But they don't have quite, and some of them are of course very respectable blogs, but they don't have quite the reach that the New York Review of Books and the New York Times Book Review has. What can we do or what would you hope our publishers would do to break through that? Anybody have any storm the walls thoughts? Because you were in publishing.
Yeah. Well, I think there are two issues here. One is that a lot of these quote-unquote respected review places won't review anything from a tiny little house, which is where most of us get published. If you're not published by Random House or Penguin or whatever, they really are not going to look at you. They're going to choose a possible bestseller from a large house, which will get a lot of attention, over a little book from a little house, especially an LGBT house. That's one issue. The other issue is, this is not to put down the publishing houses, but a lot of these small publishing houses, especially in the LGBT community, were started by people not not from the publishing world. And there are people who might be writers, maybe people just who love literature, and they wanted to put more LGBT literature out there, but they really didn't know what they were doing, and in some cases, I'm sorry to say, still don't know what they're doing, even after being years in the business. And they don't know how to get their books in the hands of the reviewers of these sites. And I think the publishers of the little houses need to be educated somehow how to go about doing that. And I don't know what the answer to that is, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't have an answer, but I do track Marilyn Stasio's reviews for Sisters in Crime. Yeah. That's where those statistics come mm-hmm. from. And it's really more almost 60-40, but...
And no LGBTQ that I've ever
none,
seen.
Yeah. The thing that I notice about her, I almost feel, you know, she's aware, of course, of Sisters in Crime and the pressure to review more women. And sometimes when I track these reviews, I almost feel like she's, you know, she'll do three men and one woman, or she'll do four men, and then maybe she'll do two women and a... I almost feel like she's playing with us in a way that she's saying, you can't make me review anything I don't want to.
Yeah.
But as far as changing, I do think one of the things that needs to be done is we need to bring these issues to the attention of bookstores like Barnes & Nobles and Amazon. And also libraries. I mean, one of the other areas where we are underrepresented is libraries. If you go on the New York Public Library and you enter lesbian romance, you don't get much. And a lot, the last time I did it, I would say probably 80% of what came up, which wasn't a lot, said, must be read in library. So you can't even take it out. So even if you're interested in it, I mean, you practically, you know, you have to go spend 2 days in the lower day in the library to read it. I mean, it's really, really a little ludicrous. And I think we need to be maybe doing something with the libraries.
Yeah, I think it's an important issue. And if you remember from my bio, I started out as a social worker, certainly. Very interested in social justice issues, and interestingly, that isn't what led me into wanting to write fiction, but pretty soon in, you know, I became aware and passionate about the social justice issues that exist within the publishing community and what I might call, you know, cultural fairness or cultural equality. So I think it's a very important question. I think that there are efforts that can help. There are campaigns such as We Need Diverse Books that people may be aware of, which is a Twitter meme. In the young adult community, there's a lot of stuff. Melinda Lowe runs a diversity in YA blog that has a lot of great resources and brings attention. So it just gets out in the media about the need for diverse portrayals. Another thought that comes to mind, and I mean, this may be in the realm of, you know, a folk legend at this point, but has anyone heard of the author Perry Moore? He actually is no longer with us, but he wrote a gay young adult book called Hero that was fairly successful. And he had a particular story about it. It's about a gay superhero that he was so upset about the lack of gay characters in comic books that he used to go to comic book stores and, you know, write little messages, you know, unbeknownst to the clerk, like, you know, where are the gay characters, and what's wrong with gay, why not, you know, gay marriage. So it's like a real sort of grassroots effort that, of course, appealed to my own sensibilities. But I think these things do make a difference. I think when injustice happens, it's important to address, too. There was a big kerfuffle with a literary agency a couple years back where some authors brought out this whole story about how they had a deal to have a book published or represented by these agents who then told them, well, we'll take it if you take out, you know, this gay character. And they took it to the media and, you know, it's, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, get 7 on your side here or whatever, but those things I think do make a difference because they do reach a lot of people, that people see, you know, what kinds of issues are going on and they become sympathetic, and then I think we do see some change.
So before we start the question, open it up to the question, let me just finish out by saying I think I speak for all of us, and I certainly hope I'm not putting words into anybody's mouth. If I am, please correct me. But I, for myself also, I think I would like the day to come when nobody says, oh, there's Ann Aptaker, the lesbian author. I just want to be Ann Aptaker, the author. And I want you to read my books and all of our books because they're good books. As RG said, you know, most of us write for small houses. Andy and I both are with Bold Strokes, which is actually not so small anymore. But nevertheless, it's an independent publisher and so on. It's not Random House. And knowing what I do about Bold Strokes, you know, they're very tough on their editing. They're very professional. We have to go through to be accepted pretty much what all of you do for Mysterious Press or Random House or anybody else. They're very, very, you know, tough to, they just don't take anybody sort of thing. And so what I'm saying then is that our quality is as good as anything out there. So all of us would very much hope that you rush right out and buy all of our books and just have a good read. Thank you. Yeah. And I'm going to open it up now to questions. So, yes.
Okay. I do have a question. I noticed that you've all been talking in terms of getting books out on the show and being seen in bookstores. But in fact, I find fewer and fewer brick and mortar bookstores out there. And so, do you think that self-publishing has changed the game for any of you?
Yes, I do, but not in ways that you might think. On the one hand, as all of you probably also know, self-publishing means that there are now a gazillion titles out there, not all of them very good, although some of them are self-published. I've met some self-published authors whose books are quite good, but the problem is you don't know as a reader. Going through a you know, traditional publisher does sort of at least give you some level of quality, even if it's just in the editing and formatting, even if it's just that. But because of the sheer numbers of self-published books that are out there now, yeah, it's changed the game. Because the self-published books are, you know, 99 cents, they're $1.99, and my publisher can't sell their, you know, the paperback is $16.95, and the ebook is $9.99. And, you know, boy, when you're making your book decision and you're going through Amazon, you say, well, you know, I'll take a chance on a 99 cent or a $1.99 book. If it's not so good, I'm not out much. But if I hate the $9.99 book, I'm stuck with it. So I think, yes, it has. Does anybody else want to address the bookstore issue?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that the, you know, self-publishing is a separate issue, I think, because the issue is if there is a bookstore like Barnes & Noble's, and there are, they are still around, and they're the main one right now, why are they segregating the books? Mm. And so I don't think self-publishing has affected that one way or another. It's just, you know, self-publishing has put more books out there in general.
Oops.
The good news is that brick and mortar bookstores are making a comeback. More, they are popping up here and there more and more because people miss it.
Amazon is
going to
open.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Amazon, I think, already did, if I'm not mistaken.
One.
Yeah, one. For now. I think it's in
Seattle,
where they're based. People miss their bookstores, so I hope it's a trend that grows. We'll see.
But I think Catherine had the sort of hit the nail on the head as far as bookstores are concerned. It's the separating out. I would like my books to just be in the mystery section. I don't want them to be just in the LGBTQ section when they're there. I've seen them once or twice in Barnes & Noble, as a matter of fact, the one on 86th Street. I almost dropped dead with shock that it was there, but there it was.
What about online? I like that.
Oh, I'm on. It's all, yeah, it's there.
You come up under mystery? Or
yeah, I come up both under mystery and LGBTQ mystery. Yeah, Amazon has me, you know, I'm not hard to find on Amazon at all. I'm not sure that any of us are hard to find. You know, Amazon makes it easy to sort of find the genre you're looking for. I'm listed under mystery and LGBTQ mystery, so whatever you're looking for. And that's okay. As long as you're listed in both, that's fine. If you want to have an overall heading and then subdivide the heading for an online source, we had, you know, thousands of books like Amazon, I don't have a problem with that. But in a traditional bookstore that just has, you know, great big romance novels and mystery novels and, you know, like historical fiction or something, they don't have the subdivisions. So I just want to be in the mystery section. That's where I want to be. I don't want to be put into this, you know, this neighborhood, this undesirable neighborhood at the back of the store. Any other questions? Oh boy. Okay, yes.
I wonder how you folks would feel about a straight person writing a gay protagonist. Would you consider that cultural appropriation? I believe the term is. I'm an agent, and the reason I'm asking this is a number of years ago, in the early 90s, I sold a series of mysteries by a white man whose protagonist was a quadroon, or actually I think he was an octoroon in New Orleans, and he passed for white and black. And there was some resistance to that, I think, from some readers or whatever, because it was like he's writing about a black experience, although it was not just a black experience. And they felt that he didn't really have the right to do that.
I would not mind if a straight person wrote, the gay protagonist.
Because, I mean, there are plenty of authors, you know, gay authors who have written about straight people.
Exactly.
Talk about going to movies and seeing,
exactly. My books, and I know the other book, I have straight characters in my books.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're perfectly believable. I wouldn't mind. I mean, I think that becomes artistic limiting, not to be able to. I feel free to write about a gay person, a straight person, a white person, a black person, you know, who owns a dog, who lives on the street. I mean, I find whoever I need in the story is who I write about. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think if it's well done, it doesn't matter. And I read a lot of ancient historical fiction, and one of my very favorite authors is Mary Renault.
Mm-hmm.
So the Persian Boy, you know, that's like really sort of the gold standard for me, and you know, a portrayal of a very sort of sweet, yet tragic, you know, gay male relationship. Also accurate to the era.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody can write like Mary Renault, for sure. I find that a lot of the more literary gay romantic books that I like happen to be written by women. I'm not positive they're heterosexual women. I don't know about Mary Renault. Does anybody know Mary Renault was a lesbian?
I think she's straight. She's straight.
She was gay.
She was gay.
Oh, she was gay.
Yes.
Oh,
well,
I thought she was gay.
Patricia Highsmith as well wrote the whole. So that's another good example. Someone who got into Front Runner. Who wrote the Front Runner?
I don't know.
Oh, the Front Runner.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a bit of a history of lesbian authors writing really great gay stories.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I want to put in a plug for heterosexual readers.
Yes.
About whom I hope that you won't generalize. And when I mean, I've always read about gay and lesbian characters. I was trying to think where. I read all the Mary Renault books. And in fact, she had some contemporary ones written in the 30s and 40s
mm-hmm.
that were very, very interesting. You know, all different, you know, different permutations, not just of gender, but of younger and older, and, you know, back in the days when British doctors could get disbarred if they slept with anybody but their, you know. And so all of those, I mean, that's part of my cultural heritage, too. You know, all those guys running around in ancient Greece, and she had some lesbian characters, too, in those novels.
She wrote ambiguous characters who were not clear, and so that they're able to slip through.
Well, I don't think
she wrote all kinds of people, but some of them were ambiguous.
Yeah, and some of them, that was, you know, it was about the love relationships, it was about the sexuality, it was about, you know, and putting it in the context of
didn't have the word gay or lesbian.
Yeah, but they, you know,
they didn't have to.
Yeah.
The Spartan gay male couple going off to war together, and, you know, she did a great job. But also, I'm trying, mysteries, Sandra Scapitone, who's one of the founders of Stitches in Crime, her Lauren Lorano series, those was lesbian characters, Laurie King's contemporary series, and
Val McDermott. But again, Val McDermott, again, is British, and she writes mostly straight stories, you know, Bird on the, Blood in the Wire and all of that, yeah.
Lawrence Block in the Bernie Rodenbaugh books, his best friend is this lesbian dog groomer. And I think it's just a plea not to assume that heterosexual readers are going to be shocked, disgusted, or disproving in any way. We run the game. And I actually skip the sex scenes. I don't care who's the girl. If it gets too erotic, it makes me uncomfortable.
Is that both for mainstream sex
And although in fact, I mean, my last historical novel, there was some very graphic stuff that I didn't expect to be there. You know, maybe I'm comfortable when I wrote it, but you know, it fit there.
But I think
you have to allow for the individual reader. You know, having individual reactions.
Yeah, I think we're talking about the idea of that a lot of gay and lesbian stuff has sex in it. And that's what makes people, the question is, does that keep readers away? And I don't know that that's entirely true.
Let me just ask a follow-up question then. Does it matter to gay and lesbian writers for the sex to be part of it, or is it wanting relationships to be mainstream and, you know, just the fact that people are people?
I think it varies. There's an expectation, I think, in lesbian romance sometimes, and some of it is more graphic than the other, some of it is erotic, and some of it is just really, you know, the bedroom door closed. I mean, there's a whole range, but there tends to be, I think, more. Well, I don't know. I don't read straight romance. I presume they have a lot of sex in them too.
Yeah, I mean, I think there certainly are a lot of books that you know, romance is not a main storyline. But it also makes me think that since romance generally sells better than some other genres. You know, I can speak from my own experience. I have at times felt some pressure to include more of a romance storyline with the assumption that will, you know, make it more marketable. So.
And, you know, like I said, in my first book, there was no sex at all because it didn't belong there. In my second book, there is because it belonged there, which was the experience I assume you had when you wrote sex into this next story. It belonged there. It had nothing to do with marketing or whatnot. It was part of the character. It was part of the story. And when I write a book, a mystery, if it belongs there, if it tells you something, especially in this book, in both of the scenes, one of them in particular, there's a sex scene, very brief, and that sets up for something very important that happens immediately after, which would have just been watery. The impact of it would have been considerably lessened if it was just a kiss in the dark or something. It just wouldn't have mattered as much. Way in the back, yeah. Yeah.
Christopher Isherwood. Oh, by the way, thank you all for coming here and being here tonight. It is a delight and a pleasure to have you here. This is a subject most worthy of discussion. Christopher Isherwood once said that if the entire world, I'm paraphrasing, he said that if the entire world turned gay, he would wish to be straight. He's not talking about a question of what preference is more desirable than another, but the question of the idea of being an outsider as a writer. And I'd say, does the question of being an outsider as a writer, and especially as a gay or lesbian writer, matter to you? Is it helpful to you? Or is the whole question of outside, in a world which is much more fluid than the world I certainly grew up in, is that a helpful distinction at all?
Yes, it is. But I think if you're, I think it's actually broader than what you're talking about.
Sure.
Yes, does being an outsider, because I'm a lesbian, affect, does it inform my work in a positive way? Yes, it gives it a certain, it gives it a very strong point of view, and it gives it a strength. I think all writers, for that matter, all artists, whether you're a singer, a dancer, a musician, or whatnot, are to some extent outsiders because we're observers.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you know, we bring that outsider worldview with us. Interestingly that you bring it up, my character being an out butch lesbian in the 1950s, when you can be arrested for that or thrown into a psycho ward, and the reason why she chooses a criminal life is because the law treats her as an outsider. The law treats her as a criminal just for breathing, because she's gay. So she figures, well, look, if the law's going to treat me as a criminal just for being alive, I may as well be a criminal. So she is the ultimate outsider. She's an absolute anarchist in that respect. So to answer your question for me, and I'll let the other panelists bring their point of view, to answer your question, the outsider status is, for me, very helpful. Now, I did say I wanted to be on just the mystery writer shelf, not the lesbian shelf. But I don't think that that's going to water down my appreciation of outsider status. Because in my lifetime, our gay rights notwithstanding and our marriage equality notwithstanding, I'm going to be an outsider. Children and grandchildren may not be, but I will be till my dying day, whether I choose to be or not. So it will inform me and my writing.
Yeah, I think it's a very good question, very interesting question. I definitely agree that it's a characteristic of writers generally that, you know, we're observers of the world that were introverted, shy people generally, who prefer to, you know, observe rather than participate. And now I just lost my other train of thought about that. Related to where were you going?
Outsider status.
I think, for myself, I think I, being an outsider, did lead me into writing in a sort of specific way, because so much of what I write takes legend and mythology from a subversive kind of angle, and specifically a gay angle. And I don't know what I would do if homophobia and heterosexism didn't exist, because there wouldn't be the need to do that. But partially coming from a place of, you know, really wanting these, you know, wonderful, timeless stories to be reflective of my own experience.
I don't feel like an outsider. It's interesting. I think maybe when I was younger and more active in the politics of being a lesbian, and, you know, in the 70s and 80s, I felt I liked it, actually. But I don't feel like an outsider these days.
Well, I've always felt like an outsider. In every circle of life, I've been an outsider. But the fact, as gay people, we are outsiders, and whether we feel like it or not, we are to a certain degree. And that's what led us to write our books, our characters, our stories, because we want our lives to be represented, which was not being represented, unless, you know, except for those early lesbian pulp novels from the 50s and 60s where the lesbian character died at the end, you know, or, you know, the love interest, you know, came to her senses and went back to her husband and, you know, whatever, all that nonsense.
Good for you, Archie.
But the fact that we are writing these stories, I think, is an attempt to... I think some of us embrace our outsiderness, but at the same time, I think everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to be liked. And I think it's our attempt at being part of the world. Mm. Because the outside world was not letting us be part of the world. And this is our attempt to be part of the world and not be outsiders, at least within our own little community.
There was questions way in that, yeah, way in the back up there in the, on the...
That would be me.
Yeah.
So I have a question about it, and it kind of goes all the way back to the beginning when you were talking about what is an LGBT novel. Mm-hmm. Because when I think of many of the mystery series that I really love are cozies. There's no sex. There might be some romance. There's usually an element of romance in there somewhere. I'm wondering if there's anything like that you know of that you have read that is sort of like that in the LGBT community.
Oh, because sure.
Those are the books that I most enjoy. Oddly enough, those who know me know that I write sex. I don't like reading it.
Have you seen a good psychiatrist?
it's just a thing. I'm bored with it. That's really the truth. I am an active member of RWA as well as MWA, Sisters in Crime, and all these other things. And after a while, you're like, okay, well, you know what? It's boring. I want my mysteries to be without.
Yeah, if you're asking, are there, you know, LGBT cozies? Yes,
yeah.
There are. There's every genre of.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, if it's in the mainstream community, it has kind of its own subset, and I'm sort of wondering if whether the LGBT community also subsets the paranormal versus the cozy.
Oh yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
And there are. Not long ago, I was asked. I had a guest. Somebody asked me to do a guest blog thing. KT Grant had me do one of the, you know, guest blog things, and I was. And in one of the things I said that actually lesbian literature was really, because there's so much of it. In a way, it's kind of a golden time for us. In a way, it's still not, but in a way, it is. And addressing just that, all the subgenres, that there's, you know, the paranormal, there's the romance, there's the paranormal romance, there's, you know, mystery and thriller, gothic. I mean, there's all of it. So I sort of envisioned that maybe someday, if I can remember all the words that I use, someday I would be writing a steampunk, lesbian, thriller, gothic, romance, paranormal fantasy. And so, because it's all there, absolutely. So whatever your tastes, yeah.
And would that end up in the dark stuff?
Yeah, the minute you put in any, you know, the word lesbian or gay or queer or bi, you know, you wind up in the far neighborhood, the fringe shelf, which is really unfortunate.
If
yes, way, 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 way in the back also.
Does anyone know if the gay theme history has ever won the Edgar?
I'm glad you brought that up, because every year, of course, I look at, as a matter of fact, because I mean, there was a timing problem, my publisher didn't submit this book this year. The first book last year was submitted, and the next book that I'm writing will be in the right time frame, and, you know, we won't miss it. It'll be submitted. So every year I look to see who's nominated and who's won. To be honest with you, I don't know the answer specifically whether there's been a gay-themed mystery. There may have been, I don't know, so I'm not in a position to say no. I can say lately I haven't seen any, which brings up the other issue, because we all write for independent houses. 99% of our Edgar nominees and winners are from major houses. Aren't the judges broadening their reading at all?
The judges read what's nominated, and that is not, the judges read everything.
Okay, so why is it that, and why is it that year after year after year after year, almost all of the nominees are from major houses?
This year, that's not true.
Well, I didn't see this year, so I don't know.
From 7th Street.
Is Crooked Lane, I think, is one.
Yeah. This year, it's...
Who nominates?
The publisher can nominate.
Well, the publisher can submit, yeah. Now, I have never seen our, you know, Bold Strokes or Bella or Sapphire or any of the LGBT houses ever on the list. And I know from having read various books from our publishing houses that there are some very, very good books out there. In the same way that, you know, Scribner's or Random House might have great books and crummy books, we have great books and crummy books. And our great books are not making it into our, as an MWA member, I can say our awards, and I don't know why.
Just to be provocative, if the mystery community does not appear to regard those books as mainstream mystery books, through the main way that that's indicated, that might go a long way toward explaining why Barnes & Noble doesn't.
Sure.
It explains it, but that I don't think it excuses it, because, you know, if you're saying only mainstream mysteries are worthy of consideration or marketing, we have a problem. We have a problem.
Yeah. Didn't the first Kate Martinelli book by Laurie King win an Edgar? This first grave talent about a lesbian.
Yeah, woman. I think it might.
Yeah, it may have, but we're talking, you know, you could count on the fingers of one hand if you had a bad accident, how many of them.
So, she said one more question.
One more question? Who is any? Oh, yes, sir.
I'd like to make a statement and put myself into a couple of categories that have been mentioned here tonight. And then I have a question about a possibility. Statement. I am a dancer. I was with Fred Astaire for 35 years, okay. National champion. Grew up in a gay community. I am heterosexual. 90% of the people that I worked with, male and female, were gay, lesbian. And I feel I can write about that because of my relationship with those people. My friends, my family, really, as close as we were. And the relationships that I saw in that community, I have put into my writing, in my community. I was part of that with them. As a heterosexual writer who writes a gay character, I was accepted in mainstream media. My character, as a private detective, was published in a John Connolly anthology, Chosen. Chosen for a Michael Connolly anthology. With the, I'm looking for a word here, with the unbelievable name of Peter Pansy, Private Eye. That's my character. And he is a James Bondian character. He was accepted for who he is, what he is, and I was published out there and accepted in that. Then that brings me to my possibility. Being part of the dance world for all of those years, the people that I knew outside of that world all looked at the gay community as, oh, stereotypical. They're this and this, and you talked about the dyke, the gay, the this, the... And it was just nuts. How do you get that into the mainstream? Because I believe the majority of mainstream readers out there think that way. When they see LGBT, that's stereotypical, I don't want that. Would it be a possibility to use the MWA's clout in the mystery community to have a John Connolly, to have any of one of the major names of people who put out the anthologies do an all LGBT anthology with their name on the book Would it be reviewed? Would it get to the Times list if one of those names was on that book?
It certainly wouldn't hurt.
Is it a possibility that something like that could come out of the MWA to enlist the help?
No, for that you would have to talk to MWA National, and I'm happy to give you their email address, but that has to be, that comes from the National.
Nobody
in this room.
No, I'm saying that can be brought up to them to see if that is a possibility with that, and do you think that would be a worthwhile project or an endeavor?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it would be very nice to have the support of MWA in including our voices, because that's what we're talking about here, is our voices. I mean, you all know as writers, the most important thing that you have, the most precious thing you have as a writer is your writer's voice. Without it, you may as well go sell socks. And it would be really strong if the MWA nationally were to support LGBTQ voices as writers, not only just as LGBTQ people, but as writers. Yeah. She'll kill me if I don't ask, if she's my sister. and you're next, I promise, but she'll kill me.
And then we'll wrap up.
Okay.
So, from the college campus, do you guys have any statistics on how you're received on the college campus? Just that is one question. Hmm. The other question, from a marketing perspective, getting into reaching the professors and various, I took a transgendered class when I was in school, and it opened me up to an area I knew nothing about. And getting to some of the professors who do that kind of work, especially in some of the larger colleges, I think is a really great way to really open it up to new minds who are learning things. Do you guys know anything about that?
Yeah, because I teach in a college, I can tell you there are LGBTQ in the English departments they do teach LGBTQ literature, but they don't really do the genre stuff. The literature that they concentrate on is sort of more politically correct. It's our history, it's Stone Butch Blues, it's all about being gay and the struggle of being gay or the voice of being gay, as opposed to first of all, the universities have trouble with genre fiction anyway, but that's a whole other panel. I know you can all agree on that, LGBTQ or anything. But in your question, I don't see them teaching or singling out our kinds of literature, even in heterosexual. Very rarely will you even find, any of James M. Cain. You're not going to find even the masters of our genre in college literary courses. Occasionally, you will, but not often. Okay, and you had a question, yes. Last question of the evening.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm Robbie's wife. And about his suggestion, I could see that there would be a possible pushback because that might compartmentalize LGBT all the more if we had an anthology just for LGBT. But it's certainly worth discussing.
Mm.
One of the things that I feel is strong in the mystery writing community is sex with subtlety. I'll say this about his Peter Panty Private Eye. Yeah, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but also there's respect, and at the end of every story, he might wink, and it's the closing of the door statement that someone said.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of you know the very famous Elizabeth George.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be in a writing workshop with me, and she paid me a wonderful compliment that she found in one of my books, I think it was the first one, the best sex scene that she had ever read. There wasn't really a sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
It was a closing of the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that... Let's not think of LGBT, pardon me if I get the acronym, as dirty, as nasty sex.
Mm-hmm.
It can be beautiful, beautifully written. I'm sure all of yours are. And somehow, if we could just find a way to promote it, but not compartmentalize it. So let's be thinking that way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you all. Now we need to confer and see who's going to win our books, one each, okay? So we should get rid of the microphone. God forbid they should hear us. Okay.
We don't get to vote.
We were advised to confer, so we're conferring.
I don't know. I get all the questions.
What's that?
Yeah.
Well, I think I have that Joseph, he was talking about the guy who was the tall guy with glasses.
Right.
Okay. He asked a good question.
No, I can't.
can't find my sister. She has my phone. Oh.